From the creators of the hit kids podcast, Who Smarted, and Netflix's Brainchild, comes the adventurous world of Mysteries About True Histories, affectionately known as MATH. Every episode follows Max and Molly, who have just been recruited into a secret order of problem solvers on an adventure through time packed with puzzles, hidden equations, history, and laughs, making learning cool. This podcast is perfect for ages 6 and up. I'll tell you what, guys, I've listened to a few episodes and they're super fun. I really wish that my son had had this podcast when he was younger and growing up. These episodes drop every Thursday. They're only about 15 minutes or so. The series explores themes like the stories behind math, critical thinking, code breaking, problem solving, and more. Each one is stacked with so much laughter that your kids won't even realize how much they're learning. So tune in to Mysteries About True Histories with your kids, and you can follow and listen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to the Divorce Survival Guide podcast, where we have open and honest conversations about co-parenting, separation, divorce, and the hardest question of all, should you stay or should you go? I'm Kate Anthony, your divorce survival guide, and I'm here to help you navigate some of the roughest waters you've ever swum in and answer some of your toughest questions. I've been to hell and back, and now it's my mission in life to help you get to the other side of this process with your sanity and your heart intact.
Hey everyone, welcome back. I am here today with Rich Heller. I was on his podcast, a couple weeks ago. He is a relationship fitness coach and a mediator. He helps parents to transform a negative relationship with conflict into one in which they resolve differences creatively. And he helps them learn the tools and techniques needed to increase joy and resilience for themselves and their children. No stranger to conflict. Rich grew up in New York City. He's one of mine, y'all. He's a child of divorce. He's been divorced and he is successfully remarried. He and his partner have been married for over 20 years and they have launched 5 children into the world. He has an MSW. He is a certified coach. He's awesome. Today, we're going to be talking about something called mental emotional release. And really, this is all about how to really work with your triggers and erase them in a sense or release them. I'm going to let Rich tell you all about that because it's really actually quite fascinating. It's a technique and it's just a fascinating sort of brain technology. But before I give you this great interview, I just want to let you know, we've got some big exciting news today over at the Divorce Survival Guide headquarters, AKA my desk in my house. Which is that the first ever Divorce Survival Guide retreat is now open for registration. We are going to Sedona, Arizona, which is a sort of known as a spiritual vortex kind of place, really healing energy there. And we are going to be staying at a retreat center there. We're going to be doing some work. So it's April 27th through 30th. It's a Thursday evening through Sunday morning. And I would love for you to join me. It's just going to be a beautiful, rich weekend of work, really. I'm just planning the whole thing. I just get so excited. I wake up in the middle of the night. And I'm like, ooh, I want to do that. Ooh, yeah, then we're going to do that. Oh, yeah. So we're going to wake up in the morning and have some fun. We're going to do like Zumba, have nature walks, all that kind of stuff. And then we're going to get down to it. And then in the evenings, we're going to have more fun. And I maybe bought a karaoke microphone for myself for Christmas that I'm planning on bringing. So registration is limited. There are only 12 spots open. And I think a few of them are already taken. So I'm not sure how many we have right now, but early bird pricing goes until I think February 28th. So if you want to get $500 off, now's the time. And you can read all about it at kateanthony.com/retreat. And there is a link in the show notes. Please don't forget, please check it out, look it up. If you have ever wanted to just hang out with me in the desert, now's the time. kateanthony.com/retreat. And without further ado, I'm going to bring it back to my conversation with Rich Heller. Rich, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us. I, full disclosure, right? Rich had me on his podcast a couple of weeks ago, was it?
Yeah.
And we had such a good time talking to each other. We were like, let's do it again.
Yeah. Really, we're just talking to each other. We hope it has value for everyone else.
Exactly. I have no doubt that we're going to be just fine with plenty to talk about. One of the things that you do that I'm really interested in talking about is this mental emotional release technique, I guess, right?
Exactly.
Where it's about releasing triggers, but not like explain this.
Almost all of us who work in the divorce field, one of the most important lessons that we can teach people is to first identify that they have triggers, right? So mm-hmm. What's a trigger? A trigger is when you go from, somebody says something and instead of going from 0 to 10 emotionally, you go from like 0 to 60. You just go, what? You know, you just it's like they push your button. That's what we call pushing your button. Right. When your button gets pushed or you get triggered, you know, you, all of a sudden a whole lot more emotion comes up than maybe the situation calls for. And the beautiful thing about triggers is sometimes we don't even realize that the emotion is too much until we look back on it. Like in the moment, we're just having the feeling.
Right.
So when you're getting divorced, right, triggers are really expensive. Right?
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And they're really expensive because, you know, you're trying to negotiate a legal document and a new way of living. But if you're going from 0 to 60 every time something comes up that feels a little scary, it slows the process down and you end up spending a lot of money on legal fees because they're charging, you know, 2, 4, 6, or even $1,000 an hour, depending on where you are in the country and who you're working with. And you end up, you know, at 2 a.m, you're calling up your $1,000 an hour lawyer saying, do you know what she said? I can't believe her. And he's like, dude, I'm a lawyer. You can't call me at 2 a.m. and talk about this.
By the way, you can't call your therapist or your coach at 2 a.m. either. But we are more suited to that conversation, right? My divorce attorney friends say, like, I am the least qualified and most expensive therapist you can ever call.
Yeah.
Right.
And some attorneys actually make pretty good therapists. They've been doing it for a while, but still really expensive. And they may not specialize in helping you learn how to manage your trigger. They might be able to talk you off the ledge, right? But that doesn't mean you're not going to go back up there. And so.
Yeah.
The first part is recognize that you have what a trigger is and that you have one. And the second part is, you know, we all help all of us who work with people in the mental health arena as coaches or whatever with people in the divorce process. We help them figure out what is a trigger and what to do about it so that it doesn't cost you so much money. And so that every time he or she says something that pushes your buttons, you don't pop out of the box like a jack in the box and, you know, and just sort of emote all over the place. Right. And what makes the MER process special is that it actually helps you to disconnect the trigger. And I spent years working with people, teaching them to identify the trigger, how to walk around the trigger. Mm-hmm. You know, a metaphor I used to use with people was like this. A person's walking down the road and he's looking at his cell phone and he falls into a hole and he goes, holy crap, I'm in a hole. And he crawls out of the hole and he looks back and says, wow, there's a hole there. The next day he's walking down the street, looking at his cell phone and he remembers just at the last second that there's a hole there. He looks, he almost falls into it. He walks around the hole. Wow. Thank God I missed that. The next day he walks down the street and he says, why am I walking down the side of the street? He goes to the other side of the street. Eventually he stops walking down that street, right? That's how we talk about triggers typically. Mm-hmm. With the MER process, we basically just fill in the hole.
Mm.
It would be metaphorically speaking. So there is no hole anymore.
So there is no hole. How does that work?
And you know, like if you've ever seen The Highway Repaired, right? It's not like you didn't know there was a hole there. And if you don't do it well, it's not like the hole, you know, might not come back. So it's not 100% foolproof, but it is a great technique for we call it letting go of emotional baggage.
This is so great. I love this metaphor because it just reminded me, anyone who lives in LA or in the Hollywood area, there was a pothole on one of the most turned corners in all of like the Hollywood area, coming down Highland onto Franklin. Everyone knows this. There was a pothole there for years and they kept filling it in. And then 2-3 days later, it was sunken in again. And it happened over and over and over and over again until they finally did something. They dug it out more, they filled it in more, and now it is paved over. But I will say it took years. And so that metaphor just brought that to mind for no reason whatsoever. It just you can work to fill in a pothole, but sometimes that pothole really, really, really wants to stay open.
Yeah, well, I mean, that sounds like it was a really good sinkhole with a deep, deep bottom, you know, and those are hard to fill.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. So how does this process work?
Let me give you some more background.
Yeah.
So we've all hear this and it goes right to our unconscious mind. So it goes like this. We are 80% or 90% unconscious mind. Right. Like everybody's heard that and they go, okay, you know, WTF. So I'm unconscious mind. How does that help me? Right. And, triggers are grounded in our unconscious mind. And what starts to happen is we start to build a relationship with our unconscious mind. Like it's the enemy, right? It's got all these triggers and all these unpredictable behaviors are coming out of my unconscious mind. You know, holy crap. What am I going to do about it? You know, I need to fix this thing. It's broken. It's the enemy. And the reality is that our unconscious mind wants to help us. It's designed to help us. Our unconscious mind is what helps us cross the street without thinking about it. Our unconscious mind, let's back up all the way to the very root. Our unconscious mind helps us to breathe. Our unconscious mind helps our heart to beat. It keeps all the bodily functions going. Our unconscious mind, on the next layer, you know, helps us to with hand-eye coordination, moving our legs, moving our feet. The more we do it, the more unconsciously competent we become at something, right? So our unconscious mind does all that. So eventually we're driving a car and, you know, if you're really unconscious and you're making that turn on whatever street that is, you fall into the pothole and break an axle. You know, if you're really too unconscious, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
But our unconscious mind is driving the car. Basically, our unconscious mind is making a lot of our emotional decisions for us also. So when we meet someone, our unconscious mind decides, is this safe and is it not? Now, what's the basis for that? Right. So the basis for the emotional stuff has to do mostly with our age 0 to 7. That's when most of the programming is laid in, but it's also layered on in the rest of our life. So our unconscious mind organizes thoughts, memories in two ways. One is in time order, in chronological order, and the other is by the kind of emotion that we associate with the event. So when the unconscious mind gets enough evidence that certain kinds of events and certain kind of feelings go together, it starts developing set strategies for dealing with those emotional situations. So what the hell am I talking about? For me as a child, I'll go personal. My grandmother and mother were rageaholics. And so, you know, there's certain behaviors that my unconscious mind developed in order to manage being around people who are rageful all the time. Right. Not that they're bad people. They have their problems. They have their unconscious minds that are all effed up and upside down. And so that strategy worked great with them. But then when I got married, you know, and wasn't married to a rageaholic, if something looked like that, I would have the same strategy would kick in automatically, which didn't work in my marriage. That's an example. All right. So what the MER process does, now that I've given you this huge, long explanation about the unconscious.
Important, but vital.
Yeah. What the MER process does is it helps the unconscious mind to systematically identify emotional patterns and release the unresolved emotion that has to do with those emotional patterns so that it can change the pattern, right? Because the unconscious mind It thinks in symbols and images and emotions, not words. The unconscious mind is created to help us. It wants us to have more. It wants us to move forward, and it wants to release emotion. But when we have enough, going back to my childhood example, it was not safe for me to say, don't talk to me that way, because I would have been at 6 years old. I would have been creamed, you know? Right. And so the only thing that worked then was to kind of at that age was, I'm just going to push it down and I'm going to be on my best behavior and I'm going to keep my head low and I'm not going to, you know, just go that way. These raging maniacs, you know, won't decapitate me emotionally. And then we'll go back to being a loving family and it'll be fine. Right. Mm-hmm. But that really didn't work for me later on in life. Right. Later on in life, it became really important to express those emotions and not repress them. And what happens later on in life when we repress something is we go from 0 to 60. So I have a trigger around anything that looks like, I had a trigger around anything that looks like rage that, you know, that needed to be unwired. And that's kind of how I got into MER was I went to a coach and they did this process with me. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. A process where a trigger, a childhood trigger can be dismantled completely instead of me noticing it, stepping around it, asking for a timeout so I can reset myself emotionally and then going and resuming the conversation without the trigger being activated, except the trigger can always be reactivated.
Right.
It's this amazing process where basically the unconscious mind is talked through releasing old emotional baggage so that you can come into new situations with a different mind, a different emotional come from is probably the best way to put it. I was going to say mindset, but it's more emotional come from than a mindset.
Okay.
You know, mindset is how we think about things, but then there's how we are or how we're being.
Since the unconscious mind stores these things in images, right? And this is why a veteran will respond, have PTSD to fireworks, because it is the sound mapping that is right, that is being triggered as if it's happening in this moment, because there's no context that is stored in the unconscious mind.
Great technique for PTSD, by the way.
Right. Yes. Well, I imagine. Right. And so what we were just talking about, right, you were saying that it can't be, you know, you can't be sort of talked through it, right? It has to be this about the come from, right? Versus a mindset, because a mindset, your mind isn't actually set in these moments when it is just about the, the pictures, the sounds, right?
Before I bumbled into the mental emotional release technique through another coach, I help people create mindsets or thought patterns or strategies for dealing with their triggers. And they were effective, but it takes a lot of conscious energy to work around these deep set unconscious strategies. It takes a lot of conscious energy. It takes a lot of, you know, you got to be really present, and not that that's bad, but how much better is it if you can just rewire the emotional basis for the trigger and not have to always be on the lookout for it.
Right. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Right.
Of course, the good news is once you rewire one thing, there's 52,000 other ones to work on. We're always peeling the damn onion.
Always peeling the fucking onion. You guys, warmer, sunnier days are calling, and you're going to want to fuel up for them with Factor's no prep, no mess meals. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are dietitian approved, and they're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you're always going to have time to enjoy nutritious, great tasting meals. And I know that's really important to you guys right now. You're going through a hard time. You're in emotional upheaval, maybe some chaos, really good, healthy, nutritious meals in 2 minutes. And I'm telling you, they're so good. You've got 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. And you'll always have new flavors to explore. Treat yourself to restaurant quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, blackened salmon. Ugh, so good, you guys. So head to factormeals.com/DSG50 and use code DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month. So the code is DSG50 at factormeals.com/DSG50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active.
Hi there, I'm Andrea Owen, self-help author with 19 translations of my books, global keynote speaker, and life coach. My podcast, Make Some Noise, has been serving up self-help in a simple-to-digest way for the last decade. The topics brought in each episode are practical and easy to implement around topics such as working through fears that keep you stuck, different modalities of therapy, managing your negative self-talk, and more. We bring you guest experts, solo episodes, and I even coach listeners on the air around relatable struggles. I also do my best to weave my sense of humor into some heavy topics because, let's face it, life can be pretty hard, and it's so much better when we can have some fun while walking through our challenges. Whether you're seasoned in personal development or just starting out, Make Some Noise podcast will help you become the best version of yourself, the person you're proud of when you look in the mirror and show up in your life. Simply search Make Some Noise with Andrea Owen wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So how does this work, Rich?
I think I want to tell you why it works.
Yeah, great.
Instead of, like, I could tell you how to do the technique, but people would sort of go, I don't get it. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Let me ask you a question. Kate, can you imagine something that has happened in the future that you're really angry about?
That has happened in the future? No.
Yes. No, because
it hasn't happened.
We don't feel emotions forward. Mm-hmm. The only emotion we feel forward is anxiety. And that's usually because we're projecting a situation on the future. Oh my God, what if, I don't even know what's going on in the world right now. I was watching Madam Secretary. What if last night with my wife and Iran was about to nuke Israel? What if Iran nukes Israel and Israel was going to nuke Iran? Wow, what if that happens? You can have a lot. Madam Secretary is all about future anxiety, by the way, right?
But, totally. Yep.
Yeah, but it's pretty well grounded.
She fixes everything
all
by herself.
Yes, she is super smart, very intuitive too. Like, she must have done a lot of MER work or something. But but anyway, you can only imagine situations in the future and have a feeling about an imagined situation, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is that our unconscious mind doesn't know the difference between what is real and what is imagined, right? And so the evidence of this is there was a basketball team where that was split up into three groups, all right? And one group was shooting baskets, free throws for a week to improve their free throws. Second group was off to Disneyland, let's be generous. Yeah. Uh-huh. And there was a middle group that was imagining that they were practicing free throws. So they would sit down and imagine they were practicing free throws just as long as the group that was actually throwing the free throws. And what they found out was, pretty predictably, the group that went to Disneyland got really good at waiting in lines, but they didn't, you know, throw a free throw any better. But the group that imagined that they were throwing free throws had almost as much improvement as the group that was actually throwing free throws, which is like kind of a whoa. So all we have to do is, you know, our unconscious mind really doesn't know the difference between what we imagine and what's real. And there's a lot of explanation for that I'm going to spare you.
And I think it's important here, right? Because we can get into law of attraction stuff with this, where it's like, just sitting on your couch and imagining $1 million falling into your lap doesn't make $1 million fall into your lap.
True.
It is. But what you're doing is you're building the mind-body connection through just the mind, not just the body.
Well, but if you imagine what it's like to be a person who has millions of dollars, mm-hmm. you're more likely to start living like a person who has millions of dollars and making decisions like a person who has millions mm-hmm. of dollars, and therefore having the space for millions of dollars or the opportunity for millions of dollars to come into your life. You still got to act.
You have to take action. That's the right. Exactly. That is the thing.
But your
That's
actions are more likely to be in alignment with that goal if you can imagine what it's like to be that person. And visualize it and really experience it. It's just like the free throw guys could throw better free throws when they imagined it. And then, look, this is athletes have known this forever. Right. I mean, there are athletes who do, what is it, high jumps, and they imagine their body going over the high jump. There was the guy who first went over the high jump backwards that had never been done before. And apparently he visualized it first before he actually did it, you know, with the pole vaulting. Somebody, you have to imagine that body movement before you can innovate it.
Right.
And so they imagined it first and then they did it. And they're like, oh, holy crap, this, it didn't go over perfectly the first time, but it was a whole lot better. You know, and that's the whole high jump thing changed as a result of first visualizing and imagining the mechanics of it and then actually doing it. Or gymnasts spend a lot of time visualizing before they actually do something. It's seriously important.
Wasn't it Michael Phelps too, who when he won some, you know, medal or something, and they said, how does it feel to this a great accomplishment? And he said, well, I've accomplished it in my mind hundreds of times.
Right.
So this is not new for me. Right.
Super,
and that's
super cool. Super cool. All right. So yeah. Hey folks, so let your imagination reign because you can do so much with it. In terms of the MER process, what does this mean? So in the MER process, the short story is that if there's an event where you have some emotional stuckness, let's stick with the example, grandmother yelling at me when I was five on my fifth birthday because I wasn't excited about something she did for me, right? In the MER process, first you imagine that you're floating over the event. You can see yourself in the event, but you're not actually in it. And you ask your unconscious mind, what's the lesson that I need to learn from this event, right? Because when we have unresolved emotion, it's because we didn't learn a lesson that we needed to learn. And so you look for a positive lesson, right? The lesson could be my fucking grandmother's a bitch, which is true. She was, yeah. Right? I mean, you know, but she was also a phenomenal human being because of that energy. I mean, I want to be really clear. You can't have like a negative like that without there being a positive. She was amazingly energetic and determined human being who when she saw injustice, fought it rabidly. Right. That she took that same energy and fought injustice rabidly. I mean, I have so much respect for her. But as a 5-year-old child, it was a little scary to be the injustice that she was fighting rabidly. So what's the lesson that I need to learn from that? You know, and then next we ask the unconscious mind to go before the event and to look forward on the timeline as if the event is in front of you.
Okay.
So now you're seeing the event as if it's what? If it's in front of you on your timeline.
So you're before it.
Yeah, you're imagining you're floating before the event. If I was five, I'm going to when I was four.
I see.
I'm looking forward. So where is that 5-year-old event on my timeline in my actual imagined experience?
Ahead of you in the
it's
future.
Now in the future. Yes. Uh-huh. Because we can't, the unconscious mind knows it cannot have feelings about the future. It is able to release the emotion. The combination of having the lesson from that experience and seeing it as being in the future, it makes no rational sense, right? This is not a conscious mind thing.
Not
it's
at
an
all.
Unconscious mind thing.
Right. Okay.
You keep thinking, I don't get it. The event.
I don't
happened.
Get it.
How can
I
it
don't
be?
Get it. What is it?
That's in the past. But the unconscious mind is experiencing that event as the future.
So are you in sort of a, you know, like a relaxed, almost like hypnotic state?
It is a semi-hypnotic state. And so anytime that we are in meditation or prayer or mindfulness or a daydreaming, we are in a semi-hypnotic state. Anytime we're in our imagination, we're in a semi-hypnotic state. And basically in this exercise, you're imagining that you're in, you know, before an event that was traumatic or hurtful and looking forward. And so you're able to release the emotions. And I take back that word traumatic because what I've discovered practicing this process is there's some people have some really traumatic experiences that we need to remove some of that emotion first before they can let it go. Like I had one client who had 3 near-death experiences involving water.
Oh my God.
And so there's some other exercises we need to do to help him release some of the fear of those near death experiences so that he could go back before them and really let it go. If something's really traumatic, if it's if it's something like that, like a near-death experience, or you've been sexually abused, or even PTSD, you know, you've been in a war zone, there's going to be some things you need to do to wash down the emotion before it can be released.
Sure. Okay. Do you do this work with couples, or is this like part of like the individual work as part of a couple's? How does this manifest?
Right now, I'm doing it with couples, but I do the individual work. We do the MER work with each of them individually. Mm-hmm. It's like the antithesis of how I used to work with couples. I used to work with couples in a mediation frame, so I would never had any individual contact with them because I didn't want to look like I was leaning one way or the other. In this frame, I go deep with them each individually. And then they work on their relationship post MER. Mm-hmm. But usually what's happened is they're so emotionally reset that post MER that it's so much easier for them to work on the relationship. Whereas in the other model that we're doing so much effort to, okay, you know, that's a trigger. Are you sure you want to go there?
You know,
post MER, there's a lot less triggers involved. So, there's much less concern about, you know, whether I'm on, leaning into one side or the other, and they're much more invested in one another.
It's in service of the couple's work. Right. In service of the relationship.
Yeah. Well, think of it this way. Healthy relationships are based on two individuals who are fulfilling their individual sense of purpose in life, mm-hmm. or for personal fulfillment.
Yeah.
And when they get together into a relationship, that's because in some way their individual sense of purpose connects, and the relationship is like a third party.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's the individuals and the relationship.
Right.
So what makes sense about this approach is it helps the individuals to let go of the emotional baggage that's keeping them individually from moving forward on their individual missions and specifically related to the relationship. And so they can come back to the relationship with a lot less stuff.
Right. It's like you're clearing the minefield so you can actually walk across the field.
Right.
You're clearing the mines. Yeah.
Anyone who's, been in couples work, pretty much all of us who have been married have heard that, you know, once you get married, somehow you bring all your parents and their marriage and your grandparents' marriage and all that, you know, everybody's idea of marriage suddenly falls into your relationship, which before when you got married, you know, you were in love, everything was juicy and sexy and wonderful. Then you get married and all of a sudden it's like, who the hell is this person? What is this stuff? You know, the MER process really helps clean up all that stuff.
So cool.
It is cool.
We should all be doing that, right? I mean, yeah.
I will say that it is not a guarantee that you're going to stay together, by the way.
You know,
I'm working with a couple right now where they're still figuring it out. You know, there have been some big breaches of trust in their marriage. You know, he's showing up as accountable and willing to clean it up and understanding why those breaches were made. And she's showing up as, you know, understanding how she created the space that allowed that to happen. And reestablishing trust takes time, you know, even with good intentions and house cleaning. And so they're both kind of waiting to see what happens. So right now they're working on their parenting, what it means to parent together first, and they're going to see what comes out of that.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes you can do all the work to clear the betrayal. You can take all the responsibility and do all the forgiveness, and it's still too much emotional water under that bridge.
Well, you know, sometimes we don't get together because we have conjoined purpose that works together. Sometimes our individual mission or purpose, you know, the thing that we are uniquely suited for in life, and I firmly believe that each individual is uniquely suited for something. We're all, you know, not only do we have completely different genetics, but our cultural backgrounds, our family backgrounds, all that makes us like this perfect key for something in terms of the greater good. Sometimes those two keys just don't go together that well. Sometimes people get married for all the wrong reasons. And so no matter how much minefield clearing you do up, the punchline might be, hey, you know what? Hey, you know what, Kate? I really enjoyed our time together. And I can see that this isn't going to work, you know, and let's raise children together and be good friends. You know, like that would be the ideal.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Hey, are you a parent of a teenager? Are you feeling overwhelmed about how to be what they need while also holding limits and boundaries that keep them safe? Are you tired of conversations that negate how messy this season of parenting is? Well, I've got you. My name is Casey O'Rourke. I am a positive discipline trainer, parent coach, and the host of the Joyful Courage podcast. Every week, I come to you with an interview, digging into tough topics with experts I trust and solo shows that go deep into the personal growth and mindset needed to raise teens in a way that grows them into confident, capable young people. I am not afraid of getting real about the intersection of conscious parenting and the teen years, while also bringing in vulnerability, humor, and lightness. I'm walking the path with you and honored to serve. Listen to Joyful Courage on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you consume podcasts.
Being co-parents is kind of where we come together, because that's, we are certainly not meant to be together.
The guy who taught me the MER process, he was relating his divorce like this. It was just really interesting, actually. He said that his name, this mystery guy, Dr. Matt James, right? So the MER process was created by his dad, Tad, James, by accident, right? His dad, Tad, bumbled into this by accident, working with a client where suddenly, you know, he helped her imagine that something in the future, something in the past was now the future, and the emotions released. And he was like, oh my God, that worked. It was like one of those moments.
Right. Sure.
And then they built this whole technique, out of that experience over a number of years. And they've taken it to universities and had it studied and validated. So Dr. Matt James, though, he was telling me I was in a class, not just me, about his divorce. And it was very amicable. And the reason for it was that he had moved from a values point of view, from being someone who really wanted to make a lot of money, which isn't bad, by the way, right? Like the world needs people who want to make a lot of money, to someone who had a very specific mission, where he became very missional, where the money was still, money's still good, but it's more important that I impact as many people as possible. And how much money I make doing it doesn't matter, as long as I can live the way I like to live. Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas his wife was still very, what we call entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. She was like, screw that, Matt. We got to make as much money as we can. Like, come on, this is a gold mine.
Yeah,
and those two mindsets just don't go together.
No,
you know, and so they agree. They agreed. They got it. They were like wise enough to see that they're in terms of purpose, something had really changed for the two of them, and they have children together, and they have a very good friendship today.
And this is, I mean, you know, when my clients are looking at whether to stay or go, one of the first things we do is values work, right? Because values are so intrinsic to who we are in the world. And like you said, you're key, right? Whatever your mission is in the world, or whatever you come to the world to do, it's so intrinsic that when they misalign, like, again, no right or wrong, like you said, there's no right or wrong. It's just, doesn't work. These two missions or these two values simply don't go together. And that's okay. Yep. Right.
Yes.
And I think so often we make divorce and this misalignment and the not lining up mean so much, right? That we've failed, that there's such a mistake, that there's so much tragedy and all of that. When really it's just, if we took all that meaning out of it, right? And just said, these two things, this is unworkable. These two things just don't fit together,
mm-hmm.
right? If you were trying to fit, you know, a Lego and a, you know, Lincoln log together, they wouldn't fit. And yep. you wouldn't get mad or judge the Lego or the Lincoln log. You would just be like, oh, these two things don't actually work together.
Yeah. Different systems, different ways of going at things, just too different and not enough shared direction.
Right. So how long have you been doing this mental emotional release stuff?
Oh God, I just started doing it in the last year.
Mm. I think it's so useful for so many people because I know that, you know, a lot of my clients, when they get out into the world, they get through their divorce and they start dating, they start to confuse and conflate red flags and triggers, right? They'll say to me like, oh my God, he has all these red flags. He does this, he does this, he does this. And I say, I don't know that those are objectively red flags. They sound mm-hmm. like they're your triggers. And maybe you want to steer clear of those things. But also maybe they're just, maybe if you worked on the trigger, this would not be an issue at all.
For sure.
Right. And so it sounds to me like this process can help you differentiate between a trigger and a red flag.
Well, I remember when I first got interested in working with people, like it was in the 90s. There was this guy on PBS. I can't even remember his name, but he was like the family systems expert back then. And I remember watching him on PBS and he had this mobile. Most people don't know what a mobile is anymore. Yeah. Mobiles, for those of you who have never seen one, is a thing you hang from a ceiling and it's got lots of things hanging on it with strings. And
it's like you put it over your baby's crib.
Right. So there you go. Families are like that, only a lot more complicated. And right. he would say that the second that the weight shifts and changes on one thing in a mobile, it mm-hmm. impacts everything else in the mobile, right? Mm-hmm. But that's also true for us internally.
Yeah, right.
Right. So but internally, the second that we let go of some old emotional baggage that's causing us to go from 0 to 60, for example, you know, the way we see the world, the way we experience the world, everything shifts along with it. And mm-hmm. then as we shift and change, everyone in our immediate circle goes, whoa, wow, what happened there? You know, and some of them try and say, no, you're in the wrong place in the mobile. You know, you need to come back over here. And some of them are like, oh, so cool. You should keep going over there, you know, depending on what kind of people you're hanging out with. So it's always when we change, it's really always interesting to see who says what when. But right. yeah, you're 100% clear. You know, when we're in one place, things can look like red flags that are actually, we're actually projecting our old stuff onto people. And when we let go of that old stuff, they might appear completely different to us.
Mm, so true. So true. I talk about this
guy's name
with boundaries. I know, right? On PBS. Who was that?
What's PBS? Do they still have that?
In our world, that was Channel 13, yes. right? My mom still says that. She's like, it's on Channel 7. I'm like, Mom, that's not the same thing to like anyone.
as well, if you grew up in New York, that was ABC.
That was ABC, exactly.
If you grew up in LA, it was like something else.
I think it's actually also ABC here. But anyway, but yes, having grown up in New York, that was Channel 13. But I, you know, we talk about the same thing with boundaries, right? It's exactly the same thing when we talk about boundaries, that you are shifting who you're being in yourself, but also in relationship. And when you're shifting who you are in relationship, a lot of people don't fucking like it.
No.
It's really, really challenging. I often talk about how my listeners have probably heard me say this a million times, that like we're all connected like puzzle pieces, right? And then when we start to shift our shape in this big, you know, puzzle of life, and we start to change our shape, as we talked about, shifting the weight in the mobile, in the internal family system, it changes how we interact with everybody around us. And every puzzle piece around us either has to shift with us or it pops out.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes they don't shift so easily because they haven't let go of their stuff yet.
Right. There's that period of strain. Are they going to, are they going to shift or are they going to pop out?
I'm big on personal examples today. So, I did this work about around, mom and grandma and rage and all that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You don't really know how, what the outcome's going to be, how it impacts. You just know that you're going to start listening things differently and you're going to have, your tolerances are going to shift and change. So I have a daughter who will remain unnamed since I have four of them. This, she'll know who she is if she listens to this show, but nobody will say your dad called you out on somebody's podcast. She likes to be angry, and she got very angry about something, and somehow it was my fault. I paused for a moment and I was like, there's something familiar about this. And it's like, oh yeah, this is that, you know, angry women thing. Mm-hmm. Only it's my daughter.
Right.
And I said to her, you know, honey, I love you and I need you to know that this is really your problem. I can't help you with this. Like, I can't fix this situation. I can't change it. This whole thing that you have around this particular issue, it's not something I can fix directly. It's something that and it had to do with communication and her living somewhere else and stuff like that. And she got furious with me. I mean, she got really angry because that's not the dad she's used to. The dad she's used to is, oh, angry woman. All right, I'm going to stuff it and I'm just going to talk through it with her.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I'll conform. I'll, yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, and so, and you know, we worked it out and, you know, now she knows that I'm not the guy she comes to sing to about those things anymore because, you know, my party line is going to be, hey, you know what? If it's my problem, I'm going to help you with it. But if it's not, I don't really care how angry you are. It's your problem. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
Like, that was a big shift for me, but really painful for her.
And, but also, probably incredibly important for her.
Maybe. We
right? hope. Because, yeah, I mean, we hope, right? I'm right, sure, right? Because, you know, this is it. Like, we do our work and it passes down. Because when we don't do our work, when we don't do our work, it passes down. So when we do it, it also passes down. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're stopping these generational cycles. You have a generational cycle in your family of rageful women, which hopefully she can put a stop to.
Yeah, pretty amazing how I recreated that in her, huh?
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
That's how we do it.
But no, it skipped a generation because I'm not a rageful woman. I'm a rageful man. I'm not a rageful. I'm no longer a rageful man. Thank you.
Thank God. Yeah. Oh my gosh, Rich. Thank you. You know, as always, we could talk about all of this stuff all day long. But so tell people where they can find you if they want to hear more about this and all of your other work. You've got lots of places and lots of channels. Where can everyone find you?
Yeah, you can always reach out to me directly if you want to say hello. My email is rich. It's easy. It's R-I-C-H at, and the name of the website is richinrelationship.com, all one word, R-I-C-H-I-N-R-E-L. A-T-I-O-N-S-H-I-P, just like it's spelled, just like it is, all no spaces. You can email me directly. You can go to that website. On Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and TikTok, it's all at, depending on which one you're on, Rich in Relationship. So just look for Rich in Relationship and you'll find all our good stuff out there. And we'd love to hear from you. Direct message me, whatever you need to do. Always happy to talk to people and explore.
I love it. Thank you so much, Rich. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you. I love it.
Great to speak with you also. Thank you for having me on the show.
Of course. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Divorce Survival Guide podcast. If you like what you hear, head on over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen in and leave me a review. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at The Divorce Survival Guide. I'll see you next time. And until then, remember, you, my love, deserve to be happy.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.